Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by your good friends over at King's Comics. My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan.
And Coombs.
Yep. No, I'm like Madonna now.
Did I say both my names?
You did, right, but cool. I just decided to go off script.
No Coombs.
No Coombs.
Get out of here, Coombs.
Absolutely.
You're no good.
I'm like Madonna or Beck
or Beyonce, Drake. Beyonce.
Exactly.
You're just singing. Or, you're not a recording artist now.
Yeah. Listen out for my new single.
Mozart?
Yep.
What's his first name?
Wolfgang.
Well, oh, yeah. Is it?
I think so, right? Amadeus. Isn't he Wolfgang Amadeus? Cho.
Okay. Cho. Every week we try and guess the names of famous classical artists throughout history. And would you believe it? It's been over 100 episodes of this and we haven't done the same artist twice.
It's amazing.
Just kidding. What we do every week is read all the comics that came out last week. And I'm going to let you know at the top of this episode's going to be a little bit shorter than usual. Not because we're the lazy ones, but because the publishers are lazy this week.
Up your game.
No, don't. This is actually the perfect amount of comics. I only read 24 books this week.
Yeah, that was nice.
It was incredible.
It was real nice.
I have a pile of 3 number ones.
Yep. I have four.
Four.
What is going on with this week? I read more number ones than 11s.
Publishers, thank you so much for not releasing that much this week. It means it's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode, but fear not, everybody. We're putting out an extra bonus episode this week on our Patreon feed about a selection of graphic novels that mm-hmm. Siobhan and I have read over the last month.
Yeah.
And these include books by Rich Tomaso, what's his name? The guy who did Box Brown.
Box Brown.
And yep. Also, who's the guy who does Deadly Class? Wes Craig.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Man.
And James Kochalka. That's how I read.
I did not read that many graphic novels this month, guys.
That's four.
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't read that many. Oh, you read loads.
Find out how many Siobhan read. Four isn't loads.
I read like 2 off the top of my head.
Okay. We'll find out what Siobhan read over the last month. If you buy, go over to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. And I think it's just $2 a month is all you need to pledge to get access to all of our bonus episodes. Ignore all the weird levels of tierdom.
Please ignore them.
Because we don't. We're
never going to do it.
I've got to go edit those to more realistic things that we will actually do. But you will get access to a whole bunch, about 10 hours of bonus material that we've recorded about comics, mm-hmm. including an episode about recent graphic novels that we've been talking about. Look, any opportunity to hear a little bit more Shinbone and Lev Dog in your life. Dog and bone.
Absolutely. Why would you not take that chance?
So go head over to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast for some bonus material. If you feel shortchanged by this week's episode, which is not our fault, it's
not
the publisher's fault.
Absolutely.
The great publishers for doing a great service to us.
Thank you.
We begin every episode of Serious Issues by reviewing the new series that started in the last week. And this week, I got 3 number ones. This segment's called First Things First, by the way. All 3 of my number ones were published by Marvel.
Yeah. Yes.
And 2 of them are like, you know, whatever, dumb mini-series tie-ins to other events going on. But one of them was just a home run, I thought.
Yeah,
and that
so
is Black Panther number 1. It's a new Black Panther number 1, written by the same dude who's written the last 24 issues of Black Panther, Ta-Nehisi Coates, mm-hmm. With new artist Daniel Acuna, who's been one of my favorite Marvel artists over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I've loved him on Cap. I've loved him on...
loved him as a man.
What did he do with Remender? He did some good stuff for Remender, I think, too.
Yep.
Maybe
which
he did.
Sure did.
Was he Uncanny X-Force, maybe? I can't remember.
No, it's
not. I don't remember. That was Rubik.
Anyway, he's great.
He's great. He's really, really good. And the two of them team up for the Intergalactic Empire of Wakanda, which sees the King of Wakanda, T'Challa, another person with only one name.
Yeah.
Just like Mozart. Black Panther wakes up in a future world. He's in space. And at some point in our timeline, the nation of Wakanda flew into space and started an empire of Wakanda in the galaxy. And as time went on, their ideals became further and further away from what we know as Wakanda's current ideals.
Mm-hmm.
And the Intergalactic Empire of Wakanda may be the bad guys, Siobhan.
Yeah, totally.
And T'Challa wakes up imprisoned and leads a kind of one-man riot trying to get out of imprisonment, beats up a bunch of people, and he doesn't really know where he is, can't remember who he is.
Mm-hmm. But he can remember a sexy Storm.
That's right. So all the while, Storm is trying to get him to wake up
mm-hmm.
In the present. This book felt familiar in its storytelling. I've definitely, like, you know, read sudden flash forwards in time in comics before,
mm-hmm.
but I thought this was done really, really well. I've not read anything like this from a Black Panther book before.
Absolutely.
And I love the idea that, you know, T'Challa is indirectly responsible for this horrible empire that have imprisoned him.
And now we get to see him team up with, I think, M'Baku and one of the Dora Milaje and do some cool...
Nakia, isn't it?
Cool space shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, so basically, I think as, like, the people from, like, you know, Black Panther's friends and family have kind of... their names live on in legend, and mm-hmm. so they're assigned to new warriors throughout time, I guess. And so, yeah, he's now going to lead some kind of, like, rebellion against the Empire.
This is great.
Man, this is fucking fun.
This is not what I expected. Like, I know that this is what was in the ads, that it was going to be in space, but I just love how many, like, different things Coates is doing with Black Panther.
Well, I mean, and compare this to his first Black Panther number one,
yeah.
which, you know, we stuck with, and you enjoyed it more than mm-hmm. I did from the get-go, but it took me a while to warm to it. For me, I think, you know, and you can go back and listen to those reviews, I said it was, you know, very obvious that this is a comic book written by a novelist.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, he's spent the last 2 years writing lots of comics for Marvel, getting to know the characters and also getting to know the format.
Absolutely.
Like, he's clearly someone that loves and grew up with comics, but, you know, writing them is it's different to writing a book, and this feels like a pro.
Absolutely.
Just flexing. It's all showing, no telling. Like, you know, mm-hmm. there's it was just a breeze to read. It's a few extra pages in this. It's a bonanza blockbuster. Other B words, Mozart,
yeah.
issue. And this was just a thrill to read.
Absolutely.
Acuna's art.
Acuna is so good.
And
he is
colors?
Just one of, yeah, I
Does
was
going to
call out the colors and I was trying to find the name because it's so beautiful to look at. And it's like this
yep.
insane, like I can't think of many artists who would be better suited to getting like the color palette for this correct.
Totally. And I don't think I've seen Acuna do like massive intergalactic space stuff too. And
he does
color his own art, by the way. So
cool.
he's a one man force. He's incredible. This was one of the absolute highlights of my reading week.
Yeah, for sure.
And as you heard at the start of the episode, there weren't that many books, so this was, you know, had less competition. Well, I don't even know.
It just meant it was gooder.
It was good somehow. Maths. But yeah, this was an absolute knockout issue. And I mean, look, I think everyone, every comics fan should definitely go back at some point and read what Ta-Nehisi Coates was trying to do along the full run.
Yeah.
The payoff in issue 12 that of the story that he was trying to build from the first issue of the previous run. And then again on issue 24, were really, really rewarding.
Absolutely.
But this is just like, if you were turned off by that writing, which was very, very like, you know, I had to read every page twice.
Yeah. It was very like, it was a fairly dry sort of political, but like, I mean, for me, that's still my favorite of his Black Panther stuff. Cause he was like really trying to do something different and say something interesting with the character. And I thought that was super cool, but also in space. That's great.
Yeah. So yeah, if you were turned off by that, his way of writing back then,
mm-hmm.
Give this one a shot. It's
Absolutely.
Great. Black Panther issue number one, one of the best that I read this week.
Sure.
Marvel put out two other number ones this week. Another one was kind of set in space too. It's the Infinity Countdown spin-off featuring Darkhawk. And unlike almost everything else to do with this intergalactic event, this was not written by...
Charles Soule?
Not Charles Soule.
I just assume he writes everything. Colin Bunn?
No, not Colin Bunn. The guy who's writing the event. Jerry Duggan.
There we go.
This is not written by Jerry Duggan. This was actually written by...
Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, the team who brought us...
Sword Quest. And they actually wrote the Dark Hawk issue 51, last year too. Which was pretty good. Yeah. This also has art by Gang Hyuk Lim. And,
which I really like. It's very like manga-ish.
Definitely.
But almost more like a sort of like a video game.
Yeah,
like a manga, like a Japanese RPG.
Yeah, it's really, really lovely, especially when he gets to draw Darkhawk flexing his powers.
Yeah, cool. Super cool.
This is going to be a 3-issue miniseries, I think. 4-issue miniseries tying into the Infinity Countdown event. And kind of first half of it is kind of picking you up to speed with this character of Darkhawk, who is a police officer who has like a gem that he used to always use to turn into a superhero known as Darkhawk, who is pretty much like a space bird.
Yeah.
He lost his powers for a while. The jewel came back. He can access Darkhawk again, but he learns some weird new truths about what happens to his body when he activates his superpowers in this one. Basically, he dies and then his body is recreated again, which is pretty weird. His like home life isn't that great. He's kind of dissatisfied and all he wants to do is to get to space and start helping the people in space.
So his brother is his brother's not a Nova.
No, wasn't it Robbie Ryder? So Nova's brother.
Yes.
Nova's brother is...
being attacked by some bad guys.
The
Raptors?
Well, yeah, the Raptors have the same costumes as Darkhawk. In fact, yes. Darkhawk's costume is stolen Raptor tech. Yeah, so look, it's a whole bunch of cosmic nonsense. Yeah,
anyway, I quite liked it though.
But I like cosmic nonsense, yeah. So yeah.
I mean, we can't explain what happened in it, but it was a pretty good issue. And now it looks like he's going to go on a sort of cosmic road trip with a fairly like hilarious new bounty hunter character called Death's Head, who I liked.
Yeah,
he was funny.
Yeah, like, looks good. Like he's like weird medieval villain with a massive laser pistol.
Yeah, and a big skull head.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot to like about this fun little tie-in. Whether or not it'll have much weight in terms of the bigger event is irrelevant. It's fun. It's good. Absolutely. Good character work for the character of Darkhawk. And I know Darkhawk is like a kind of fan favorite that everyone wishes had an ongoing series still. So get this one if you missed him.
Absolutely. It's worth it, guys.
So that was Infinity Countdown Darkhawk number one. And we move on to the final number one for me this week. Hunt for Wolverine continues with the fourth mini-series dedicated to the Hunt for Wolverine. Which begs the question, which of these miniseries will actually find Wolverine? And I predict none of them or all of them.
Yeah, true.
So do you reckon they're all going to end up at the same place and that's where they find Wolverine? Or they all find a part of him? Like Mystery of Madripoor, which is the one we're about to review, find his foot?
One of them finds like his hat. One of them finds his cowboy boots.
Right.
One of them finds his patch.
Keep going.
Trying to think of
one
different
more,
costumes.
One more thing.
One of them finds his brown costume. One of them finds his yellow costume.
Oh,
one of them finds his beers. This was trash. This took me so long to read.
Mystery and Madripoor.
It took me like 100 years to read everything else.
Mystery and Madripoor is the name of this one. This features a team of all ladies. So Jubilee, Domino, Storm, Kitty Pryde, Psylocke and Rogue. Written by Jim Zub, art by Tony Salas. And
who draws some very strange boobs.
Yep. Strange boob watch. Lots of them in this one. Philippe Sobrero on colors on this one, who colors some very strange boobs, though no fault of his own. This basically has those ladies, those lady X-Men, ex-ladies, travel to Madripoor to track down Magneto to ask him if he stole
Wolverine.
But turns out Magneto is not even in Madripoor, some other weird...
like a sexy lady villain with a brain, her brain showing, which is the sexiest part of a woman.
It's my favorite organ.
Oh, God. God, that was awful. I also hate, because this has a classic, like, all of the ex-ladies going to a nightclub, which I feel like happens a lot in X-Men comics. But all of their outfits are awful.
Mm-hmm.
Awful, awful, awful.
Yeah,
you did a bad job. Silas, is that who it is?
Salas.
Salas. Tony. I'm sorry, Tony.
I liked his take on Magneto, though, even though it's not actually Magneto. But Magneto looks great in a tux with his wispy anime hair.
Yeah, I'm into that.
That was cool. They've gotten, I feel like the first two miniseries we got of this, which I can't even remember now because we've gotten so many of these, but they were pretty good. And then that last week that Mariko Tamaki did with the zombies was less good. This one may be the worst.
It may be the worst.
Watch me keep reading them all though, because absolutely, I'm invested enough in the first two of them that are.
And I want to see who finds his claws.
So it's Weapon Lost, which is the Daredevil one. That one was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adamantium Agenda, which is the new Avengers one. So Luke Cage and Jess Jones. That was the Tom Taylor written one. That was probably my favorite.
Yeah. And then Claws of a Killer,
which is the zombies one, which I don't need zombies. Yeah. Zombies are dumb.
No one needs zombies.
Home Run for Marvel. Then Swing and a Miss. Loaded Bases. I don't know many baseball terms, everybody.
I was going to see how far you could take this baseball metaphor.
No, sure. And then A Soggy Hot Dog for Mystery and Madripoor.
Gross.
You read one number one that I did not.
I did. I read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends. Because the cover looks great. The cover looks like a really classic Turtles, Eric Larson vibes.
Yeah, this is killer.
Which is really cool.
Because it was Eric Larson.
Yeah. And the interiors, he inks it as well.
Oh, wow.
And it looks like an Eric Larson comic.
Oh my God, it looks ridiculous.
It's hilarious.
It's so 90s.
It's so 90s. It's like the most 90s Turtles book. It's borderline unreadable.
So it's published by IDW, who do all the Ninja Turtles stuff, written by Gary Carlson, art by Frank Fosco, with inks by Eric Larson, and Chance Wolf, colors by Adam Gazowski.
And this is the most surprisingly, like, rude and, like...
Cool but rude?
Borderline
cool but
sexist.
Rude, do you want? Cool but rude? Do you get what that is a reference
no,
to?
No, I don't.
Raphael.
I'm so sorry.
Raphael is cool but rude. Give me a break.
I'm so sorry.
Michelangelo is a...
Look, I don't know.
He's a party dude.
Anyway, there's like a bondage lady villain who has spikes all over her head and like the most Eric Larson costume of all time.
Uh-huh.
And they're just all like, look how hot she is. Nah, I bet her face is ugly because she's wearing a mask. Like shit like that. And I was like, God, this is so weird for a Turtles book. And then like...
Is it not a reprint from something like a long time ago or is it...
No, it's new. This is new.
So strange.
Oh, is it?
Okay.
So it's a reprint?
It is a reprint. All right.
Why does it say first issue on it? Fucking hell.
Okay, Jim's come through with the knowledge. Jim Papadubadubu from Kings has come through.
Racist.
Has come through with the... that's not racist. Just my inability to read consonants in a last name that has more than 8 letters.
Papa Gregorio. It's my favorite word to say. Anyway, it's not great. So apparently this is a reprint of an old Image series.
From the 90s.
Definitely reads like that.
Right, there you go.
I'm probably not going to read it anymore, if I'm honest. I would love to like just look at the pictures forever.
Yep, a fun oddity.
That's about it.
And wonder if the hot lady does indeed have an ugly face under that mask.
There's only one way to find out.
Take the mask off? Yep. Or draw it yourself.
Draw yourself.
That is First Things First for the week. And now it's time to play a fun game called Roll the Dice for Image, Marvel, or DC. Thanks to our very good friend...
Brad Love. We love Brad Love.
Who made us a very, very cool three-sided die. And we're going to roll it. And I rolled Marvel first. And then I rolled Image. So Marvel, then Image, then DC.
Great.
So let's start with some more. It was a pretty good Marvel week this week.
Yeah.
In fact... And a less good DC week, and the one Marvel book that I didn't like is by a writer that's famously leaving Marvel to work for DC. So good luck with that, DC.
Who's leaving to work at DC?
Bendis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that wasn't good.
But
anyway.
The one thing I want to talk about first is a book that we've been waiting 6 years for, and that is S.H.I.E.L.D.
A book that I literally was never thought, even like the week before release, I was like, there's no way this is coming out. So it's all a Hickman trick.
In 2011, we got a 6-issue miniseries that was written by Jonathan Hickman, one of the greatest writers for Marvel in the last decade, with great art by Dustin Weaver, who we last reviewed a bunch of his anthology series that he did last year, which is really cool, a sci-fi anthology series he did. But they did a book together called S.H.I.E.L.D., and basically, it was the idea that S.H.I.E.L.D. has existed like right before like in like BC. So from like basically the Imhotep. Mm-hmm. Is he Aztec or is he Egyptian?
No, he's Egyptian.
Egyptian. Imhotep, the Egyptian god.
Nope. But yes.
Egyptian
pharaoh.
Historical figure.
Yes, there we go.
apparently quelled a brood invasion in 2620 BC. And so the idea is that this organization is named after Imhotep's literal shield. Mm-hmm. And they shield the earth from...
bad shit,
galactic threats, and so people throughout history, including Michelangelo, including Isaac Newton, including Leonardo. Da Vinci, have been members of SHIELD, and the bulk of this series, the kind of main protagonists are Howard Stark and Nathaniel Richards, the fathers of Tony Stark and Reed Richards, mm-hmm. respectively, and there's all this bonkers space shit that goes on. It's so over the top fun and silly. Hickman at his most Hickman-y. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Before he did all of the extremely Hickman-y Image series that he's kind of been better known for, he did this SHIELD series. And then the following year, 2012, they followed it up with what was to be a 6-issue miniseries. And after the fourth issue, which ended on a crazy cliffhanger, we didn't get an issue or no explanation of why we didn't get an issue of this until today. Last week.
Yep.
And we got SHIELD issue 5, written and illustrated by Jonathan Hickman with Dustin Weaver, colors by Sonia Obeck and Dustin Weaver, letters by Todd Klein. And this we got the previous four issues of this second edition of mm-hmm. this of SHIELD releases in one form, in one kind of comic 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But even trying to read that, I was like, no, I have to go back and read the first miniseries too to remember what happened.
Did you do that?
I did. Oh. I'm very, very grateful to myself for doing that.
I read nothing. I just jumped into this and I was like, I have I know I'm not going to understand it, but I just wanted to look at it.
And God, I mean, what did you get out of this? Were you lost or had kind of fun being lost?
Yes, absolutely. Totally lost. But it's like Leonardo da Vinci sort of killing people with a rock. And
that's Asimov. Newton. Isaac Newton.
Why is he wearing a robe?
Anyway. Newton does that too.
Newton's so, wearing
so
like
the, a... So basically the SHIELD ended up being it's Isaac Newton versus Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
With the help of the intergalactic space being Michelangelo and other weird... It's so fun and silly and great.
So out of the box, guys.
And... Towards the end of the last issue, they had a secret weapon in three brothers who were pulled from, sometime within history. And basically, this issue, which is issue 5, follows the trio of brothers. And basically, every page is split into three kind of sections, and each section follows a different timeline featuring a different brother either dying or leading the way or being more prominent in that section, mm-hmm. and all the differences in that timeline. It's so fucking great and cool, and it's like, you know what? Take 6 years to write this. Take
Absolutely.
6 years to draw this. Like, Weaver's art is so remarkable, and I meant to check, but I can't remember anything else besides this that I've read that he did in the superhero world.
Yeah, but me neither.
It's such good shit. It's so good.
It really is great. It really is great comics. And I would give Jonathan Hickman as long as he ever needed to do anything, and I would still read it.
Mm. I love all of his creator-owned stuff, but there is just something so magic about him being given the free rein to do whatever the fuck he wants in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. I think what I would I keep saying that I'm going to do this, but when I have some time, I want to sit down and I want to read all of his Marvel stuff from start to finish, because it all was interconnected and it was so good. It was so fun.
Definitely. Well, and then when this finishes a month from now, or 6 years from now, depending on when they give us issue 6, I assume it is coming for next month. This is a great way to kind of this is almost like his farewell to Marvel.
Absolutely. I hope that they'll collect it all in a trade.
Yeah, I have it all digitally. But man, this was an amazing issue. So cool, and in my opinion, worth the wait. Although it is one of the most ridiculous stories in comics history,
for sure.
The fact that it actually came out, though, it's
amazing.
It's incredible.
I thought it was never going to happen.
So that is SHIELD issue 5. I can't wait to read the final issue, and I hope I actually get to.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend picking this up in the full series up in any way you're able to.
Yeah, for sure.
I wonder how many of our listeners actually have read this from the start, like me. Do you remember reading it when it came out?
Yeah. I remember reading it when it came out. And being like, Okay. Yeah. I guess this is never ending.
Hilariously, this tied into Invincible Iron Man issue 600 this week. Did you read this?
Yeah, I did, because I was like, oh, it looks like it's like...
It's Bendis' final comic.
To be honest, I was like, I thought Bendis had already left, and I opened it up and I was like, what in the fuck? Like, someone's just doing their best Bendis. And then I was like, oh, it is Bendis. Bendis doing his best Bendis.
This is the most Bendis-y comic I've read in a while, and yeah. I liked most of it. But there are some moments in this book that made me just be so happy that he's not writing Marvel books anymore.
I just could have done with like 100% less dialogue.
Sure. What? So just a just silent issue. Silent. Imagine that. Bendis's finale. No words.
That would have been really good. No one would have expected it.
So if you've been keeping up with Iron Man continuity over the last era, we had two Iron Man books and two people wearing Iron Man suits. Neither of them were Tony Stark. He went in a coma and then missing after Civil War II. Mm-hmm. And then we had Riri Williams making her own Iron Man suit and becoming Ironheart. And then we had Dr. Doom picking up the mantle of Iron Man in his book Invincible Iron Man, whatever mm-hmm, it was called. Mm-hmm. The last few issues have been dealing with Tony's return. Before he went into a coma, he learnt that his parents, Howard Stark and whichever one other Stark, were not actually his parents.
Martha Stark.
In fact, he belonged to his parents were like, one of them was a Hydra agent, the other one was like a Joan Jett-esque rock star figure and come S.H.I.E.L.D. double agent. Mm. And when she fell pregnant and found out that her husband-to-be was a Hydra agent, she killed him.
Oh, no.
But he's not actually dead. He's back as well.
Oh, no, that's worse.
So they're balancing a ton of things too. Plus, Tony Stark decides that not only is he still alive, but he also is going to bring back War Machine, James Rhodey. So they're balancing so many things. And in the midst of it, for some reason, Leonardo da Vinci is there just kind of like...
Come to my superhero school, Riri. Kind of vibe.
There are moments in this, actually, like, you know, for as weird and dumb as a decision to complicate Tony's parenting situation, I like that he kind of came from that. It kind of explains his character. I feel like adding that extra dimension to it is just so stupid. But whatever. I thought the moments between him and his parents were actually quite nice. I really loved the moments between Doom and Tony in this.
Yeah, they were good.
And the moments of him, you know, like, it doesn't really work. Like, apparently... War Machine, because he had Stark tech in him, he couldn't actually die, even though Thanos punched a hole through him in Civil War 2. So War Machine is back, everybody, and they're both bald.
It just makes me like, just I'm so exhausted by the character of Tony Stark just doing whatever the fuck he wants with no like.
Yeah, being in a coma for a year.
And then just fucking around with life and death and bringing back his best friend. The whole thing is like, I just want to.
The whole thing is just an analogy for Bendis at Marvel.
I know.
Like, he leaves. The final thing he does is... it's not actually an analogy, I was joking. But the final thing that Bendis does is that...
Who's this girl at the end?
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. But I love that the final thing that Bendis does is he's made Tony Stark and War Machine bald, just like Bendis.
And he's fucked up Doom's face again, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Doom's face is fucked up again. But
now he's bad again, because only hot people are good. Fucking hate comics. But I like that Blade is teaching at the school that...
That Leonardo owns.
Yeah.
Give me the Leonardo and Blade team-up comic.
That's all I want.
So my main problem with this issue was that it leaves so many bizarre open threads that it didn't need to. And the most ridiculous of those is this weird kind of epilogue which introduces this thing that he's been hinting at throughout his run of Tony Stark becoming the Sorcerer Supreme. And the epilogue is some random girl who we've never seen before come to the Sanctum Sanctorum.
I've seen her in something.
She kind of looks like Echo. That's what you're thinking of.
Who's Echo?
Echo from the Daredevil run. She's deaf, and
wasn't there some character in an X-Men comic that maybe Bendis was writing or something?
Oh yeah,
that she can like go into different dimensions or something.
Magic?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it could be her.
Someone out there will remember.
In any case, Kurt
about.
Wagner, Nightcrawler, is
and she's Australian. It's the fucking Australian chick from. Because he goes,
oh, you're right. Yeah,
I'm sure
is.
I'd remember that tacky haircut, Aussie, as if that's a thing Nightcrawler would say in any future.
So, this is like his little farewell to the X-Men as well with Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
I remember actually looked up Australian heroes in Marvel the other day, and she was one of them. I can't remember what her name is though.
Anyway,
long lasting impact, everybody. But
farewell, Bendis.
Farewell, Bendis.
Bendis has come.
Bendis has come. But it would have been amazing if Marvel advertised Bendis is going.
Yeah. All new writers on all your favorite comics.
Young people, except Mark Waid. but the art on this, I mean, if you're going to go out with a big boner, extra sized issue.
If you're going to go out with a big boner,
you may as well do it with an incredible lineup of artists, which includes Stefano Caselli, Alex Maleev, David Marquez, Daniel Acuna, Lionel Francis Yu, Jerry Anguian.
Nailed it.
Jim Chung, Mike Diodato Jr., Mark Bagley, Andrew Hennessy, Scott Hanna, Andrea Sorrentino, Marte Gracia, Alex Maleev, Daniel Acuna. This is the colors now. Guru FX, Romulo Fiato, Marcelo Maiolo, and Rochelle Rosenberg. Pretty amazing lineup, and a lot of them have been longtime collaborators with Bendis. So it was a good little, you know, farewell to this little corner of the world.
Yep.
And I look forward to the new corner.
I mean, look forward is a strong word.
As in, yes. Look forward to the corner that doesn't have Bendis in it anymore.
Oh, yeah, true. Who's taking over Iron Man? Isn't it Nick Spencer or
Dan Slott.
Oh, Dan Slott, that's right.
I think that'll be good.
Yeah.
I think Dan Slott's like gem. Like, I grew bored of his Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah, it's time for him to...
Which he has. Smith is taking over Spider-Man.
Mm.
But I loved his Silver Surfer run, so hopefully it's more like that.
Mm.
That'd be great.
Absolutely.
So yeah, goodbye, Bendis.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy your time at DC. I look forward to the long break I have before having to read one of your new books. Oh, wait, Man of Steel comes out this week. But Siobhan's not doing the episode next week.
Yeah, so. But I'll still read it because I'm an idiot.
Oh, cool. Great. Siobhan's an idiot, everybody.
I'm an idiot.
Send us some money on Patreon. We had another farewell this week, but not as sad, or maybe not as happy. Doctor Strange, issue number 390, was the final issue written by Donny Cates, who's written, I swear it's like less than, maybe if you count Damnation, it's probably like 12 issues all up.
Yeah.
But it feels like a much longer time. And
he did some iconic things, I feel. I hope Bats stays around.
One of the, he kind of brought the magic back to Doctor Strange. Not
absolutely.
Because Jason Aaron kind of like
killed
removed,
it all.
He killed the magic, everybody. But he's brought, there's magic back in Doctor Strange's life now.
Mm-hmm.
He can use magic again. And he also gave him a ghost dog.
Yeah.
Which is great.
The best possible kind of dog.
So this, that's not true. An alive dog?
I mean, yeah, I guess.
Okay, good. So a ghost dog is the runner up. It's the second best dog after an alive one. Great. What's the third best? Zombie dog?
Schrodinger's dog. Alive and dead
box.
At the same time.
A box with the word dog on it.
Yes, please.
So again, written by Donny Cates with art for the most part by Fraser Irving, doing fucking incredible work
so
on this.
So good.
And then we had recap art by Rod Reyes, Gabriel Hernandez, Walter, and Jordi Belair. Cover by Mike Del Mundo doing, I guess this is the farewell to him too, because he's been doing covers for the last few issues as well, and they've all been amazing. And this one in particular was just brilliant. Like the... Featuring Strange, Bats, and Zelda.
Yeah.
Selma.
Zelma.
Hiding from Spider-Man. So great.
I love it. And the little interlude, double-page spread, drawn by Chip Zdarsky.
Fuck, that was just...
So funny.
Probably the best thing I read all week.
Yeah, really funny.
So this whole... the whole thing is like... You could read this as a one-shot. If you haven't read any of the Doctor Strange stuff, it's almost like a kind of housekeeping issue in which the final... Like, you know, he has to clean the slate for Doctor Strange. So so all of Jason Aaron's stuff and Donny Cates' own stuff kind of gets cleaned up, and now Mark Waid can take over because he's sending Strange into space as well.
Mark Waid is sending?
Yeah.
Mm.
Next, the universe awaits Doctor Strange by Mark Waid and Jesus Sayers.
Well, I like Jesus Sayers.
Yeah, what about that alien? Weird alien girl, like Avatar meets Star Wars.
Yeah, that's good.
Finally. So yeah, it's like a kind of cleanup issue, but it's a really good one.
Absolutely,
it works as a one shot. Basically, it's just Strange trying to like piece his life together. But first, we see Zelma, who has been kind of like first was like his ward, kind of in Jason Aaron's run, and then Donny Cates threatened that they were going to have a relationship, and thank God they didn't.
But it kind of feels like they might at some point.
Yeah, but I don't need that.
No.
I don't need every old man to date someone young.
But don't we want Doctor Strange to get laid at some point?
He has that weird devil girl that...
What?
The girl, like the daughter of the devil.
Clea? No.
Is that...
No, I don't.
It sounds like Santana. Santana.
Oh, that's not his girlfriend.
Recording artist, Grammy Award winner.
Carlos Santana.
Yeah, exactly. I really loved this. I loved it. Had great character moments between Zelma and Bats and Strange, but then you also have the wild card in Spider-Man, who's just kind of hanging out in the Sanctum Sanctorum because he needed to pee,
yeah,
and he knows that there's no security protecting it at the moment. And then you have this great moment where Spider-Man realizes that Strange has a ghost dog, and he's really excited because he's a ghost dog, and then the ghost dog is really excited because he loves Spider-Man. And like, it was just done so joyously and fun. And then the only reason that Spider-Man has even come to visit Doctor Strange is that he heard that he could cast a spell that allowed Spider-Man to like talk to a spider. So there's a double page spread in the middle of this comic called Peter Talks to a Spider, written by Donny Cates with art by Chip Zdarsky. And it's this like, it starts up like really like sweet and happy, and then because it's really like morbid.
Yeah.
Of Spider-Man really talking to a spider, and it's fucking... It's
so
stitches.
Good. It's so funny.
Yeah, it was great.
But also, like, the panel just before that where Doctor Strange goes, "Sigh, do you want to talk to a spider, Peter?" And Peter's face is like...
Yeah, this silent gasping, yes, so do. Excited. It was so great.
Anyway, that was great. I loved it. Good.
So, like, yeah, Donny Cates wrote a great Strange. Also, like, when Spencer fucks up Spider-Man, put Cates on.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Like, he's already doing Venom stuff.
And he's great at it.
So, yeah.
I love the way Fraser Irving draws Zelma as well. That's my favorite Zelma.
My favorite Zelma?
Yep. Great. I like her floating head. It's good.
Excellent. I love this. This is probably one of my favorite comics of the week.
Yeah, that was a good issue.
Go back and read Aaron's run, and don't forget to read Cates' run too. And also, in the middle there, we had Dennis Hopeless.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of good little, totally. Good burst of Strange comics.
Was Hopeless the one who actually introduced Bats?
No, that was Cates. Okay. Moon Knight issue 195, written by Max Bemis, featured art by Paul Davidson, who's someone I'm not familiar with, but he has a very independent comics feel. Not a different vibe. Not a big two style comic art at all, which was awesome, I thought. Mm-hmm. Colors by Matt Lopez. And so, yeah, not only do we have like a big jump in terms of like style of art in this issue, but also the style of story that we're telling is completely different to the kind of Holocaust story that we got last month. But it's told like it's still very obviously Max Bemis, who is a writer that I've not read much of, but his personality shines through his comics.
And he has a great voice and like sort of concept for Moon Knight. I like that he's kind of taking on some big themes.
And so this is a new threat for Moon Knight, who at the start of this issue swears that he's, you know, leaving all the weird shit to the X-Men, and he's just going to go back to being a street level guy. But unfortunately, an art collective have different ideas, and they decide to basically they want to be able to feel what each other feels. And an experiment goes wrong, and they all merge bodies into this disgusting mess.
Fleshy blob.
Fleshy, yeah. Where you can see all
the collective.
But they can also like take on like other people.
Yeah.
So they suck in other people, and at the end of this issue, they suck in Moon Knight. Of course, as you know, Moon Knight has the multiple voices within his head that converse with him. This sees all of them now in the collective's world. And this is just a weird, crazy comic that you would be, you know, expect from Dark Horse or Image, except it has Moon Knight in it and it comes out from Marvel. And I think I just love that this is like essentially an indie book. It's almost like this is a young animal book.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
It has Moon Knight in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I loved it.
And the colors by Matt Lopez are very, very good. I enjoy them a lot. It makes it look slightly independent, slightly old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. Everything's like a little bit muted. It's just so gorgeous.
Yeah, real cool stuff. I highly recommend this Moon Knight run.
Yeah.
Issue 195 was a good one. I have a Star Wars book.
Oh, yeah.
But have you got any other books in regular Marvel continuity first?
Cool. Tell me about Star Wars.
Star Wars Annual number 4, which doesn't make much sense because I think it's only been 3 years since they started putting out Star Wars comics.
Confusing.
At Marvel. But maybe there's another reason they put out an annual. Oh, that's right, because there's a new Star Wars movie out in cinemas right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's called Solo. I thought it was boring, but other people really liked it. So, okay. Whatever.
Cool.
If you disagree with me a lot of the time, maybe you'll love it.
Mm.
Star Wars
Annual. Why are you listening to this?
No, I love listening to people whose opinions I don't agree with.
No, I don't.
Like, as long as they're like sound and like, as long as they're not just like, this sucked, fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually my, I'm going to try and review a comic like that in this very episode.
Yes, please.
Yeah, you know, I think it's fun listening to people that have different opinions.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, if you disagree, should all do that.
No, you can disagree with me and I'll enjoy listening to you. Anyway, Star Wars Annual number 4 features an incredible cover by our boy Trad Moore.
Yeah, I nearly picked that up because I was like, oh, but I knew the interiors would make me sad.
But the interiors are done by 3 artists, Ario Anandito, Roland Boschi and Mark Laming, which is super exciting to see Laming on a Star Wars book. Written by Cullen Bunn.
Okay.
Which I was like, oh, how's this going to go? Colors by Jordan Boyd and Andre Mosser. And this is like a really, really fun and silly Star Wars story about 2 cursed lightsabers that make the owner of them evil, but they come as part of a pair. And so this opens with Han Solo's ex-girl, Sana, trying to sell one to a buyer, and then another one gets brought to Darth Vader, and both the buyer and Darth Vader are furious because they were part of a set. Where's the other one? And the other one of them ends up falling into Luke Skywalker's hands. Luke Skywalker tries to escape with it by doing pod racing.
Great.
It's real silly and all over the place. The artwork in it, like any 3 of these artists should be a regular Star Wars comic book artists. I much prefer it to the photo referencey stuff that we're seeing in the ongoing Star Wars book. And I would probably still be reading if the cartooning was as good as it is in this annual. So yeah, look not a remarkable story, but a really fun one.
Yeah,
Star
cool.
Wars annual number 4.
So you want out of a Star Wars comic, right?
I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed Solo. How about that, everybody?
Nice.
There wasn't enough pod racing in Solo. So now we move over to Image. And Image, I think I read the most Image books this week, maybe.
I read so many DC books. I've just noticed. Good Lord.
Looking forward to that section.
Oh, yeah.
Skyward, issue number 2. Now, do you remember talking about Skyward, issue number 1? This is the one in which Earth suddenly doesn't have any gravity and most people float into space and die. But one man predicted that this would happen. And the protagonist of this book is his daughter,
mm-hmm.
who is like a delivery gal,
mm-hmm.
Who uses a gun to get around the gravity-free Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, we learn that like the 1% of the world bought anti-grav boots
mm-hmm.
and party in nightclubs on the ground floor and are terrified of the world outside.
There was some pretty funny like world-building details in this, like no all women have to wear pants. And there's like a lady who's like, yes, I've weighed down the bottom of my dress. It's going to be all the fashion.
It's got a magnetic hem. Yeah, that's
pretty funny.
Women wear pants because in a no-gravity world, dresses would just show your undies.
No one wants that.
So this is written by Joe Henderson with art by Leah Garbett, colors by Antonio Fabella. I think this issue was strong.
Yeah, this was much more interesting than the first issue. It's a really silly concept, but he's like all in and it's fun.
Yeah, and we're getting great character moments and there's like little attention to detail things like, you know, the character's hair is always in the air because mm-hmm. there's no gravity, which I think is really cute. The artwork's really, really good. And I like the main character. She's fun.
Yeah, totally.
It looks like, you know, there's going to be some evil doing afoot coming mm-hmm. soon. So, yeah, definitely pick this one up. Highly recommend Skyward.
Yeah, absolutely. Image. Good
super fun.
Fun.
I've got the 3rd issue of Barrier this week, which is...
4th issue.
Fucking hell. 4th issue of Barrier. That means there's one more, isn't there?
Yep.
Barrier by Marcos Martin, Brian K. Vaughan, and Munza Vicente. This is the kind of half immigration comic, half space abduction comic.
It's about aliens.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Guys, and both kinds. This I know book, what you were thinking.
This book was almost dialogue free as we learn more and more about our two protagonists who are both stuck in space and unable to speak each other's language. Actually, there was a lot of dialogue in this, but there were parts of it that didn't have much. In this very, very grotesque alien ship, which is like a living thing that they've been abducted to, unaware if they're ever going to be returned to Earth or if they're even going to survive, but relying on each other and the limited amount of communication they can do to survive.
So, so good.
Yeah.
I can't, like, everyone should be reading this, right?
It's brilliant.
It's so gorgeous.
It's as good as comics get.
Yeah. Marcus Martin is like such a terrifying talent, and the colors are so beautiful, and the story is so compelling, and the back matter is great, and everything about it is great.
Yeah, so one more issue of this left. I guess we'll go into greater detail when the final issue comes out next week, but man, I hope everybody's reading this because it's so good.
Yeah, and someone was telling me we had Queens of Kings last night. It was a great time. And one of the girls was saying that they're not going to print a trade of this.
Oh, fuck.
It's just going to be, they're just doing the singles and having it digitally. So this is one that you should be getting in single, especially like the sketchbook in the back where he sort of, Martin shows all of the like kind of weird plants that he based the sort of icky, fleshy ship on. It's really cool, really interesting to see. Good to see his like sort of influences.
I bet we get a trade eventually.
Maybe, probably, but I'm picking up the singles anyway, just in case.
Crafty. We got the final issue of The Further Adventures of Nick Wilson this week.
Oh, wow, I didn't read that.
Damn it. I was really looking forward to you ranting about the back matter.
Was it bad? Tell me about it.
Long and ridiculous. Like
Guys, did you know writing comics is really hard, but I'm really good at it, and no one's ever thought about doing it before. I'm a screenwriter.
That is the voice of Eddie Gorodetsky, who is one of the writers of The Further Adventures of Nick Wilson, alongside Mark Andreyko, Steven Sadowski on art, colors by Hi-Fi. This is a book about a has-been superhero who, 10 years after he loses his powers, is in a career slump, and his once-was enemy is now opening a museum dedicated to Nick Wilson.
And it's colored like it's the 90s.
Yeah. It was a kind of fun finale to this issue. I don't think I need to read any more of this.
Are they going to do another series?
They hint to as much. There were clever moments in it. Like it is like a 90s era, like a High Fidelity
or even a
Kevin Smith kind of slice of life relationship book that has a once was superhero aspect to it, even though you don't see any superhero bullshit in it at all.
What's the point?
Yeah, it felt very much like a remnant of the 90s, especially when it comes to like, wearing your music influences on your sleeve and
Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Every opportunity to show that. Yeah, but like the Manic Pixie Dream Girl in this instance is obsessed with like old blues and jazz. The person doesn't exist.
She's got like wacky colored hair and blah, blah,
blah, blah. And so the writer's rant at the end is all about how much he likes Tom Waits and that he knows Elvis Costello.
That is impressive.
Real odd. Yeah. Anyway, this is a strange book. Just getting to know this guy, Eddie Gorodetsky, who I've never heard of before reading this book, but he clearly thinks we've all heard of him.
Yeah. Is he? He's a screenwriter, right?
Yeah, I've never actually looked up what he's done.
And I don't care. He's probably written things that I love, and I don't care.
But
it's
like,
just like I don't need another white dude trying to unpack superheroes and like, oh, I used to be a famous boring man and now I'm not a famous boring man, and that's really tough for me.
But you know, one of the things I like the most in it is him rekindling his friendship with an ex-girlfriend that he had in high school.
That was nice.
That didn't get a good payoff, I don't think.
No.
But yeah, you didn't even read it.
I'm just assuming it didn't.
Yeah, good assumption.
Was she in the end? She was like, "Oh, but I really wanted to fuck you the whole time."
No, it wasn't like that at all. Actually, it was good. It wasn't that satisfying. Mm. He makes out with a younger girl.
That's the better thing.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I don't know. Fuck, whatever. It's
over. Makes me want to go to sleep.
The Beef, issue number 4.
Ah.
Yes.
I love The Beef.
One of the coolest surprises in comics this year, I think. Written by Star Kings and Shane Lyne, with art by Shaky Kane and colors by Ross Hell. The Beef is a story about a man. Oh, sorry. Shaky Kane does all colors. Ross Hell is the designer of this book. And there's a lot of very cool design ideas actually throughout it.
It's a very designy book.
A man who works in an abattoir, which then sells its cows directly to a burger shop next door, which our main character has eaten hundreds and hundreds of burgers there. Mm-hmm. So much so that he becomes more cow than man and has superheroes related to a cow. But this comic and this issue in particular is very much about unearthing and letting you know all these kind of like secrets of the beef industry
and the dairy industry as well. Like, every issue of this has had some element, like a slightly PSA element, and I kind of like that they have a real point that they're trying to make, and they're doing it in like a hilarious way with a disgusting fleshy beef monster as a hero. But it's also about like, it's about immigration, it's about what we see as being American, it's about
guns.
But mostly it's about how fucked up the dairy and beef industry are. And I felt genuinely affected by this. I feel like I am, like, I don't eat dairy anyway. But I'm...
Well, I drink almond milk now. And as I was reading this, I was like, man, I'm doing the right thing.
You feel really smug? Yeah. What about all those almond babies?
If someone makes an almond monster comic, I'll feel real guilty.
The
really
almond.
I worry about how many almonds it takes to make a liter of almond milk.
Yeah.
And how many trees need to be grown. What do you think?
Look, I make my own hemp milk.
Oh, really?
I make my own oat milk.
What's better?
Hemp milk is pretty gross. But it's full of protein, guys.
Yeah, I have hemp smoothies all the time.
Yeah.
But I use almond milk instead of homemade hemp milk.
All those almond babies crying out for their mums. Anyway, this was great. Is this the final issue, or have we got one more issue?
One more to go, I think.
Everyone should be reading this. It is like good fun as well as good messaging.
Great art.
Great art. And the
moments of silliness alongside moments of like genuinely good information.
Mm-hmm. And then the final page is like the funniest sort of weird team up ever, where Gandhi grows out of milk. Like, there's a gallon of like a huge milk truck spills over and Gandhi grows out of it to save the cows.
The first 6 pages of this issue are narrated by a cow who tells you all of the secrets of the beef and milk industry, it's revealed that Gandhi loves cows and cows love Gandhi, and then at the end we see Gandhi. This is great.
It's a really good comic.
What a great,
guys.
Great comic. The Beef, pick it up. Check it out. It's really, really cool. Even if you're like, I don't like beef. Well, you'll like it even less after reading this comic. I tell you that
much. Absolutely.
Deadly Class, issue number 34. Have you tapped out of this series?
No. Oh, I picked it up. Good issue.
Oh, what is that cover you've got? Have I got the A, or have you got the... I got the B.
The A cover. Beautiful Wes Craig. I mean, beautiful in like the most horrifying sense of the word.
I'm trying to work out who did this one. It's pretty good.
That is nice. I like that.
Metal party. Deadly Class, issue 34, written by Rick Remender, with art by Wes Craig and colors by Jordan Boyd, out through Image Comics this week. This is
like a classic Deadly Class end of arc depressing issue.
Yeah, but it's so frantic and action packed this time that I feel like every time he does this, where, you know, he builds you into this false sense of security where you're like, oh my God, they're just friends now and everything's going to be fine for these kids now. then suddenly it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse, and to a point where, like, you know, we have everyone pointing a gun or a knife at another character at the end of each issue. But it's just gotten better and better. It doesn't feel like you're reading the same thing over and over again. Fine tunes it, and there's character moments, and even though the situations that our characters are in aren't that different, the characters themselves have grown a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think this issue. I mean, look, I'm celebrating the writing in that last paragraph of, of thing I just talked.
Paragraph of thing I just talked.
Woo! Should I name the episode that?
It's yes, please. But man, Wes Craig is like, I don't understand why he's not doing more. Like, I'm glad that he's focused on Deadly Class, but man, he has
his own book, that Gravedigger's Reunion.
Oh yeah, that's also good, but I would like him to do more art.
Me too,
because he's very 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 good. And I love the like Maria, who in the first arc I did not care about at all, and I thought was like pretty dull and annoying, has come in like become this amazing fun character I'm really into.
Yeah,
she has a fan made of knives, everyone.
Siobhan, if you like Wes Craig and wish you could see some more art, or even hear someone talk about some more art that he's
done, that's what I would like most of all.
Where he's gonna, his comic Black Hand Comics is one of the things we'll be reviewing in this week's Patreon episode.
Excellent.
Patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, everybody. $2 a month.
$2.
Final image book for me this week is Manifest Destiny, written by Chris Dingus. Matthew Roberts, Tony Akins, and Owen Gianni, the creative team on this one, through Skybound and Image. This is a book about, oh boy, Lewis and Clark.
Nice.
I did it. Lewis and Clark, who traveled from one side of America to the other in an actual history, but this book adds monsters into the mix and weird superstitious goings-on to their journeys and a massive body count. And if you were on their crew, traveling from one side to the other, surely you would stage a mutiny at some point, right?
At some point, right?
And that's exactly what's happened in this current arc.
Oh, thank goodness.
In fact, Lois and Clark aren't even in this issue.
Oh, cool.
This is just all focusing on those who have mutinied.
Mutinied.
Mutinied. Mm-hmm. That's definitely the word. Against Lois and Clark. It's really, really interesting. I just want my monsters to come back, please. There was so many cool, weird, gross monsters in the first like 20 issues, and we haven't seen a big, gross monster in a long time.
I can't believe how long this has been going.
It's really good. It's got legs. Like, even though I'm like whinging about no monsters, it's still a good series.
Yeah, cool.
So those are our image reviews for the week. Now we move over to DC. Oh boy, there's a saying.
It's not
a saying at all. It's not even a poignant sentence. But sometimes, Siobhan, when...
You said poignant.
Poignant. Sorry.
That's all right.
Did I say that right yet? Poignant? Poignant?
Yeah. That's good.
I didn't mean to.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to laugh so meanly.
No, that's fine. I mean, I'm about to insult a comic. So.
Yeah, cool. Go for it.
Yeah. Terrifics, issue number 4, was a book that came out through DC's New Age of Heroes line, written by Jeff Lemire, who I'm a big fan of, featuring a bunch of DC characters that I'm a big fan of too. Plastic Man, Metamorpho, Mr. Terrific, and it was like a riff on the Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
Had art in the first 3 issues by Ivan Reyes, who is a kind of like classic DC house style artist. I like him on a Green Lantern book, sure.
For sure.
But I did not enjoy this book much at all. I couldn't work out what I didn't like about it. Issue number 4 of the Terrifics has a new artist in that of Doc Shayner, who is someone that I've loved for a long, long time because his style reminds me a lot of Darwin Cook and Chris Sumney in a way. But, you know, all we've got from him through DC recently has been like the Future Quest, which was neither here nor there when it came to storytelling. So having him on this book after, I think he did all the character designs as well for Reyes to do, I was excited. I'm like, shit, is this going to change the, you know, how I, my thoughts towards this book? Yes, it did.
Yes, it did.
This has gone from a book that I was felt like I was forcing myself to read just because it had Lemire's name on it. This issue was just a joy to read.
Real good.
Really, really good. I don't know if it was just the art was the only thing holding me back from enjoying it, but like, I feel like the characters are a lot more fun in this issue and work better together in this issue. But, I mean, all I want to talk about really is just how good of an artist Doc Shayner is.
Yeah.
He was, like, built to draw Plastic Man.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Metamorpho. Like, so good at just, like, these... You know, he's so good at drawing weird characters but also making them look human.
Yeah, absolutely. And as well as, like, he draws a great Mr. Terrific and the action sequences are really solid, and that's not something I necessarily expect from Doc Shayner. I expect it to, like, look gorgeous.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's just brilliant. And I love his version of, are we calling her Phantom Girl?
Yeah.
She looks like a teenager. She looks like a young girl. I like that.
Yeah, she's cool. She's cool as heck.
Really cool. Really great issue. I loved it.
The dynamic between all the characters makes sense now.
Yeah.
I kind of understand what the book is trying to do now.
Yeah.
In this one, they all went back to Phantom Girl's planet. Of course, the four characters aren't allowed to be separated,
mm-hmm.
or else they'll like
explode,
which is a conundrum.
Yeah.
I just loved everything about this, especially the art.
Absolutely. And the colors by Nathan Fairbairn are like perfect.
Yeah, definitely. Those two are such a great match.
Absolutely.
It just makes you go like, why did you put Ivan Reyes on it?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? I feel like I have some problems with like DC just pushing things out too quickly and just not... like, not considering the fact that art makes a difference,
yeah,
guys.
Totally.
Well, and it's changing
both,
artists all the time.
Both DC and Marvel have said dumb things in regards to artists over the last couple of years. But, this is having, like, the artist be, like, the focal point, but then only planning to have these artists that you sell people in the book on for three. I mean, Jim Lee did one issue of his one.
One issue.
What's the point?
What's the point, guys?
Anyway, we have Shane on Terrifics now. It's a really good book now.
Yeah.
And I hope Shana sticks around for a long, long time.
Me too.
We got another New Age of Heroes book this week, and that is The Silencer, number 5. He's reading this?
Yeah, I like this.
Dude, I love this.
The most, like, surprisingly great comic. I really like the art by Victor Bogdanovich, another person who wasn't like, the big name that was supposed to be doing this arc.
This is meant to be John Romita Jr.'s book. He did three issues.
I like Bogdanovich better, though.
Yeah.
It's like a sexy Greg Capullo vibe.
And at least John Romita Jr. is still doing the covers, so it doesn't feel like too much of a drastic, you know, like, good departure.
Yeah.
This is written by Dan Abnett. This is my favorite Dan Abnett book at the moment.
Absolutely. Without question.
And, basically the Silencer is what used to work as a assassin alongside Talia al Ghul and Deathstroke. This features
Leviathan.
Yeah, and this features Deathstroke coming down to kind of give her a warning that Talia is not to be trusted and mm-hmm. she can't ever actually leave Leviathan.
Mm-hmm.
And
she just wants to be a normal mum.
Exactly. It's something we all want.
It's the best deep power. Down.
But it's great. And like, I really liked his take on Deathstroke. It didn't feel too dissimilar from mm-hmm. Priest's take, but it also didn't, Priest's Deathstroke, but it also didn't like feel like he was aping Priest's dialogue either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the kind of the threats in this feel really, really real. And
absolutely.
You have like, this issue finishes with Talia and Silencer about to get gunned down by assassins in a diner. And Silencer's kid is there too, playing with, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's the Superman of China.
So
and the chubby Batman.
Before he moved to this book, Bogdanovich was the artist on New Superman.
Mm.
And Silencer's son is playing with a new Superman and Batman of China.
I think he actually suits figures. This book better than the Justice League of China.
Definitely works. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So much fun. Good. So much fun. So yeah, I mean, I didn't love all the New Age of Heroes books so far, but I really like Silencer and Terrifics now.
Absolutely.
But before we had the New Age of Superheroes, Siobhan, DC gave us, I can't remember what the tagline was, but we're going to talk about their other one
that they did.
We're going to talk about some other DC books. And these are books that have creative teams leaving them. We got the final issue of Detective Comics written by James Tynion IV, who has been, writing this for, well, since Rebirth happened really. So I think it's like almost 50 issues,
mm-hmm.
if not 50 exactly.
It's pretty impressive. It's a great run.
And considering it was fortnightly, it's absolutely impressive. There's many issues in that short of a time. And it was all the one story too.
Yeah.
A big team of Bat fam, including, Tim Drake and Batwoman, Azrael, Batwing, Cassandra Cain.
Spoiler.
Stephanie Brown, mm-hmm. Clayface.
Mm-hmm.
And this issue, 981, which featured, art by Eddie Barrows with inks by Iba Ferreira and colors by Adriano Lucas. Kind of had him kind of bidding farewell to every character that was featured in this series, which is no mean feat. And some of them aren't as satisfying ends as the others.
No, I mean, we don't really see Batwing or Azrael at all.
We just kind of get like a sentence about what they're going to do next.
But I think he did a really good job at tying up all of the loose ends. And I really like what he did with... I'm really hoping that, like, Spoiler and Cassandra Cain get something out of this. Some kind of book. I like what he did with Batwoman. I like, what's George doing behind me?
George just put on gloves and then held them near your head.
So weird.
He's going to dye your hair color.
Oh, God. And the stuff that he did with Tim Drake especially was exceptional.
So I thought this had absolute high points throughout the entire run. At one point, it was my favorite DC book, but yeah. I definitely think towards the end, it got really boring.
The last arc was no fun.
So a lot of things, a lot of the resolutions in this, I was like, oh, okay, I'm glad I stuck it out to the end. But I think, and you know, we always kind of go on about how good it is to have the one creator work on a book for a long time. But this book made me realize, like, maybe I don't always want that.
I think that, like, My ideal is like 12-issue arcs. Give everyone a solid 12-issue arc, same writer, same artist, and just stick to that.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
I like that. That's pretty much what I was going to say. I think there is something to, like, I know collectors fucking hate it, but there is something to the way Marvel does things where, you know, and then some of the relaunches aren't always good, but it is kind of a good, it is good to get a change up sometimes.
For sure.
Even though this had so many characters in it, I think the main premise of it could have done with a change up at some point.
Or just throughout, like, the run. I mean, that's a really hectic schedule, doing a fortnightly book with one writer. Like, I feel like you just need someone else there to bounce ideas off and to help you get the scripts down. And maybe that would have been something better. Hmm. But I still think this was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Tinny and the Fourth will go down as like having done a really solid Batman run, which is impressive.
Definitely. It had some absolutely great moments in it, for sure. The next writer on Detective is the guy who is doing Michael Cray at the moment.
Oh, cool.
Brian Hill.
Brian Hill?
Yeah, and he's also been announced as the writer of Miles Morales' Spider-Man book, now that Bendis is gone.
That's exciting.
Super exciting. Really cool.
Cool.
Super Sons, issue number 16, this week had its final issue, although we've learnt that they're coming back in some way, shape, or form quite soon. In fact, they're coming back next week in a god-awful Hanna-Barbera crossover with Dino Mutt.
Yay.
This issue was written by Peter Tomasi.
I am not reading any of those. I just realized that's exciting for me.
Lucky you. Carlo Barberi and Brent Peoples did pencils with inks by Art Thibbert and Scott Hanna. Really colors by nice. Proto Bunker.
Really nice cover by Jorge Jimenez.
Yeah, I mean, the book was at its best when he was doing the interiors. Yeah. I think this is maybe the worst the book has looked, but it still doesn't look that bad.
Yeah.
And this was a final little mission for our super sons, Damian Wayne and John Kent, to go on. The whole thing is being, like, narrated by someone in the future who is old.
I assumed it was John Kent.
Yeah, because his grandson or whatever looks just like him. But he could also just be Damian Wayne too.
I know it is a personal obsession, but I just find it so insane. Like, none of the Justice League have dicks. Like, look at the Flash.
It's an all ages book.
It's so tucked. Yeah, but like, what it like?
Give a bit of
kids
a bulge.
Kids have dicks.
Joking.
Do you know
just,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Kids have dicks. Possibly a great name for the episode.
No, that's bad. But you know what? Why penises aren't like inherently rude.
Well, especially not if it's just bulge form. Like, it's just the suggestion
to, like,
that there is one there.
Have it be that detailed. Christ. Anyway.
like I said, the Jorge Jimenez draws bulge. Also, have you seen photos of Jorge Jimenez?
Yeah.
Whew.
He is a handsome man. Guys, holy moly. Someone else posted a picture of Clay Mann in the Serious Issues group as well. That's a really handsome man.
Whew. Handsome issues, letting you know who are the handsomest creators in the game today.
Oh my God, that is definitely a bonus episode that I'm doing at some point.
Okay, great.
That's really creepy. I'm not
super
doing
creepy.
That. Imagine if a man did that to a lady. No one will ever talk to me ever again.
But I thought this was a strange way to farewell. It wasn't a bad one, but
nothing happened.
It just summed up what I thought this book never got right, and that is it just always kind of gave the two young kids superheroes missions that were kind of way above what I wanted them to be doing.
Yeah.
I liked the idea of them, like, you know, solving pet crimes and and just kind of, like, you know,
just that
tripping the penguin over in the street and stealing his donuts.
Exactly. That sequence from Spider-Man Homecoming where they're like, Spider-Man, do a flip. Like, that's all I wanted. That's all I want.
Them starting their own little rascals group.
Yes.
He-Man woman haters.
Yes.
Do that. So yeah, hopefully they start their own He-Man Woman Hatters group in the next Super Sons iteration we get.
We can only dream.
I think Tomasi is still gonna, you know, this is his creation, this team, mm-hmm. and so is John Kent. So I think he's gonna continue doing it. That's a goddamn good cover, isn't it?
It is a great cover,
and I love John Kent's outfit. Then I was like, no, it's not outfit. Then I was gonna say uniform.
I do this all the time. I always call when we're watching basketball. I'm like, oh, I like their outfits this week. And Nate gets angry at me.
I hope you can buy. I would wear that. That's a good like a little.
Would you really?
I mean, you know,
theoretically,
for when I had to work at King's Comics and do like the tiniest amount of cosplay effort.
Speaking of artist change up,
I was going to say, speaking of cosplay, next week's guest who's filling in for you is a very good cosplayer.
She is.
That's a sizzle.
One of the only cosplayers I have time for.
So Justice League No Justice issue number 3 came out this week. This is a book that I was enjoying quite a lot for the first two issues. It kind of pits all these almost every hero in the DC universe on different teams to save the world from an intergalactic cosmic threat. Written by Scott Snyder with and James Tynion IV and Joshua Williamson, with art by Riley Rossmo. Oh, Riley Rossmo doing it in this one. And Marcus Toe.
So I did miss Francis Manapul.
Yes, in a big way. Yeah, right. Of course, that's who it is.
Don't
Riley
promise
Rossmo.
Me a 5-issue Francis Manapul
4-issue
series and then take it away from me.
But the art was the thing I had the least problem with in this issue. This was
all right.
No, this is back to Dark Ages metal, whatever the fuck it was called. Dark Knights metal, like over the top explanation science bullshit.
That's true. It's a bit much happening.
So much happening. It was just to take a break, focus on the character moments between all these things. Stop worrying about the, you know, explaining what the threat to the world is. And I don't know. There was some fun Starro moments. But is Starro dead now?
I hope not.
I love Starro.
Like, that would be really disappointing to give us this really fun version of that character for 3 issues and then kill him off. Boo.
But this was just, yeah, lots of like scientific mumbo jumbo just kind of like spouted by all the characters that means nothing.
And a really annoying Harley Quinn.
Yep. Can you believe it for once?
For once.
She's annoying.
God, it's so hard to get her right, isn't it?
Yeah. I really like the Amanda Waller and Green Arrow team up. That's like my favorite thing from this.
Same.
So give them a book together.
Look, and if this leads to the Legion of Superheroes coming back, I'm down.
Okay. One more
Do
of this.
You want a book of Amanda Waller and Green Arrow?
How weird would that be?
What would it be? They just fight about politics like, all the time? Yes, I want that.
Yeah, imagine if they reboot Super Sons. And they just call it Super Sons for some reason. And it's Amanda Waller and Green Arrow.
And they just want...
And they're living in the same hideout
that
the Super Sons have.
Yep.
And every issue...
Looking after all the animals.
Yeah, yeah. But like every issue you just see like John Kent and Damian like peering through the windows trying to get back into their headquarters.
Sounds good. And they just sit there and talk about... Yeah,
argue about politics.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
I'm into it.
You read Batgirl.
Yeah, I did read Batgirl. It kind of, I don't know if, because there's nothing in it that says it's Hope Larson's last issue, but this felt very final.
DC never let their creators say goodbye in their comics.
It's really weird. It felt
I love
like
it when you get that.
Yeah, totally. This was a story where like Batgirl was sort of, it's like that classic, like you're trapped in a dream, but you have to get out of it. Wake up, Babs, sort of vibe. But it was weirder than that. But it was good. It was good. I've really enjoyed Hope Larson's run on this. I think she has a great sort of voice for Babs. The art is by someone young. Let me find it.
Someone young or someone young?
Young.
Young. Oh, young is the last name. Right, sure. Because I was going to say, like, one of the best things about this iteration of Batgirl is that she looks so young.
Yeah, Minkyu Young and Jose Marzan Jr. on inks and Matt Lopez on colors. And so this kind of has, like, Babs sort of getting out of her own sort of negative cycles. Do you know what I mean? So like breaking out of the same patterns of dating the same guys, being the same person, and now she has like a fresh, bright future. So I feel like if this is the end of Hope, I should probably do any research before I do this.
Yeah.
But if this is the end of Hope Larson's run, I think she's done a really solid job, and I think I hope she gets more sort of mainstream superhero work while still also having the time to do her own shit because she's great.
But her influence on how I view the character of Batgirl, like when Batgirl shows up in the end of Detective Comics to mentor Cassandra Cain, I was like, oh, but Batgirl's like younger than Cassandra Cain because that's how I read her.
Yeah.
She feels like a teenager in this.
Really? I still feel like she feels like that kind of mid-20s, not sure what she's doing. She has a librarianship degree, but is that really what she wants to do? She's figuring it out. She's going to go find herself in Asia and make out with some boys. And then she's going to come back and be a mentor to Cassandra. I like that. I hope that turns into a book.
Cool. We got another young animal book this week. We got the third issue of Jody Hauser's Mother Panic, Gotham AD. This featured art by Ibrahim Mustafa. Is that his name?
I think it's like,
is it a final page? God damn it. We should have a document.
Here we go. Yeah, Ibrahim Mustafa, colors by Jordan Boyd.
Boyd was busy this week.
He sure was.
A bunch of this
episode. He's a busy Boyd.
So I didn't realize, but Mother Panic, following the finale of her last series, has actually traveled to a different dimension.
Yeah. Did you not?
I didn't get that from the first few issues. Right, okay. Even if they implicitly say it, it must have just not stayed in my brain.
Mm.
So figuring that out in this issue, I was like, oh, right. And in this different dimension, I never saw her as someone that was in the regular continuity anyway. So
yeah,
I thought she was always just outside of it. Whatever.
All
I'm saying is that like they didn't need to go to a different dimension to have the Gotham be all fucked up here, right?
I mean, I guess not. I guess like in the past, she was explicitly supposed to be in mainstream,
right? Sure.
DC continuity, which is why I get that they did this, and I'm really loving this arc. I feel really sad that it's ending. And I fucking hope someone does something with this character because she's so great. And I'm devastated that we're not going to get the like incredible sort of team up between her and her mum that we all deserve.
Totally.
And I want to see.
So yeah, she's in this dimension to rescue her mother who's been taken hostage by a new villain in this.
Was the same villain from the last
arc. So she traveled there first.
No. It's just an alternate universe version of her. Fun. So she's like an artist called Gala. And like, she's fucked up Harley Quinn. And that looks like Jason Todd.
And Duke Thomas, right?
Duke Thomas, you got to assume.
Who killed the Joker with a crowbar.
Great.
See, I feel like if Tom King did that, you'd hate it.
For sure.
There's a backup.
I would.
There's a backup issue, backup little comic written by Jody Hauser with art by Paulina Ganucho. And it's basically like finally telling a story in which Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy are just explicitly lovers.
Yeah.
They're
in love.
They're in love and they are together. I liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot.
I'll be sad to say goodbye to this universe.
Yeah, I know.
I love Jody Hauser.
Oh, I mean, but she's fully on our radar now because of Young Animal.
So for sure.
That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Motherlands.
I also read Motherlands issue 5.
Out through Vertigo.
From Cy Spurrier with art by some guy whose name is...
This is the space reality TV show Assassin
Bounty
comic.
Hunters, mother-daughter... Yep. Relationships, crazy mech suits. Fucking where is the page that says who the artist is?
I think it was on like page one. Let us know where it is. Yeah, I'll find it.
Here we go.
You found it.
Art by Rachel Stott, colors by Philippe Sobrero. I really enjoy this. I know that you have sometimes a problem with Cy Spurrier's kind of world building approach because he's like, what's
he
is the wackiest shit that I could possibly do? And this has another character sort of... who similarly to Dark Orc has like deleted herself and is just being stored on like memory chips in the sort of little car thing that she drives around. And we don't sort of realize that she's died until the final issue. And it's about sort of estranged mother-daughter teaming up to take down their brother. I mean, her brother / son.
Who's also a bounty hunter.
But he's like a villain. And it's really sweet because you kind of, where you think this is going, like, this issue totally changes everything. You think that it's all about this mother trying desperately to get her favorite son back, but it's actually her wanting one final adventure with the daughter whose life she ruined. And it's kind of gorgeous. I think Cy Spurrier has a really, like, lovely understanding of mother-daughter relationships somehow. And I think he's created a really compelling world. And it's funny and it's silly and I really like it. I like everything that he does almost.
Any sign of it wrapping up soon or?
I think it's probably going to be 6 issues.
Right.
I would be like, at the very least, it's going to be like, I would assume the next issue is the ending of this arc. I don't know if it's going to go on any further, but it's a really satisfying read.
Cool.
I'd recommend it.
Motherlands issue 5, the end of our DC segment. How many other publishers' books have you got?
I have three.
Me too. I call it exactly the same three as yours.
Nice.
Black Hammer, Age of Doom came out this week.
What a cover.
Issue number two, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Dean Ormston and Dave Stewart. Letters by Todd Klein. Hilariously, like, you know, we're getting from Lemire over at DC, he's doing a book that, you know, purposely apes lots of Marvel tropes, mm-hmm. especially the Fantastic Four in his terrific book.
Mm-hmm.
This just is him kind of paying tribute. I mean, we've seen, I feel like he kind of hit it a bit better in the first series of Black Hammer, but like there's a lot of homage to both DC and Marvel within Black Hammer, particularly DC, especially in this arc where we see someone else take on the mantle of like a Constantine kind of figure.
Yep. It's very like, I feel like Black Hammer is trying to pay sort of homage and reference to all the different ages of superheroes. So this is very much, we're now in like 90s DC Vertigo.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially when you get to like the last couple of pages.
Definitely. Which we basically see like his take on the Sandman,
yeah,
show up.
It's real fun. I like this a lot.
It's real fun. Also made me realize like he would be a great pick for someone to start writing a Sandman series.
Yeah,
if they were to do that. I know Gaiman still is. He's the one writing in the next one, I think. But
yeah, but they're going to do a whole universe of them, aren't they?
Maybe. I'm sure they will. Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't done that already. Yeah. But yeah, look, this just continues. Like, you know, the mystery of why all the superheroes are stuck in this dimension, what happened to the original Black Hammer, and as his daughter kind of travels through all these different awful dimensions trying to find him. The main reason this comic is so good is just the beautiful relationships between all the heroes.
Absolutely.
It's so tragic and sad because, of course, it's the Lemire book, but that's where so much of the heart of this book comes from.
And we also get to see the new Black Hammer fucking shit up in hell. Cool.
But not really. It's a trick. Yeah, I love Dean Ormston's take on the devil.
Yeah,
so
it's
great.
Very Mignola.
Yep, so good. Great colors by the man, Dave Stewart. So
and the cover of the next issue looks great.
Yeah, I love this universe that we get little peers into whenever we get an issue from it. And I hope it just continues to be a thing for a long time.
Absolutely.
I wonder if it's gonna if they are gonna wrap this story up. Or if he's like, fuck it, I want to do a good thing with all these spin-offs. So I'll just keep this story going for a while so I can keep doing weird spin-offs.
I don't know. I mean, wouldn't it be hilarious if it just kept going until like it reached now in terms of referencing
sort
of superhero comics?
Yeah, well, I mean,
and it just becomes a horrifying mess.
He's kind of gone from Silver Age to 90s pretty quick.
Yeah.
Fun.
All new, all different Black Hammer.
So through Dark Horse also this week was Incognito Renaissance, which is a book that comes out through Karen Berger's Berger Books imprint through Dark Horse. This is the fourth of five issues of this miniseries, which is a precursory book to the original Incognito series, mm-hmm. written by Matt Johnson with art by Warren Police. It's basically about a lighter-skinned black man who is able to kind of pass... It's also set in the...
20s.
And so him being able to pass as a white person gets him many things that he wouldn't and a lot of his peers aren't able to get.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing is about him investigating the murder of a friend of a friend who dies mm-hmm. in the first issue. And he meets a woman who is similarly fair skinned. And the two of them kind of confide over that while slowly working out who the murderer is.
It's a really like, good sort of noirish murder mystery. It's really compelling. Has something to say. The art's really gorgeous. I love it.
The characters are wonderful. I still haven't read the original Incognito yet.
No, me neither.
And I might take that still home today, actually. I love Warren Police's art.
Yeah.
And I hope I continue to see both of these creators once the series finishes.
Absolutely.
Real Agreed. Good stuff. Final book for me this week is Love and Rockets, issue number five. But really, it's like issue number fucking...
1 million.
Yeah. written and drawn by Gilbert and Jamie Hernandez, Los Bros Hernandez. This is the long-running Fantagraphics comic, which started in the 80s, and all the characters from both of the brothers' comics have aged in real time. So this comic sees a 40-something-year-old Maggie and Hopi reminiscing on their punk days, mm-hmm. and there are flashbacks to those punk days in the Jeremy Hernandez sections, and then the Gilbert Hernandez sections continue this his crazy porno soap opera comic, which now features like the daughter of the daughter of the daughter from the first series that we saw set in Palomar. It's really, really crazy.
Yeah, it's the book like I because I've read so little, like, and just bits and pieces here and there of Love and Rockets. But it's the comic I love to read without knowing what the fuck is going on. But I just love it every single time it comes out. It's so, like, perfectly illustrated. All the characters, like, obviously because they've been writing them for, like, however many years, everyone just feels real.
Yeah, well, this is, like, as someone that's read everything, this was an extremely... this is a, like a kind of a gift, really, to get this so much closure on Maggie and Hopi's relationship, because when they were teenagers, they were kind of like an on and again, off again relationship together, and then they both kind of didn't see each other for years. And so now that, you know, they've grown up, they're both with other people, but having this like hilarious night together talking about their past was really, really satisfying to read in a way that I don't think many comics are ever able to kind of get to in such an incredible amount of time that the Hernandez brothers have been able to with the series.
And they're just such amazing cartoonists.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're so unique as well. Like, yeah. It's just, it's so great. And
it's so good.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that only read Jamie Hernandez's parts as well.
Why?
There is this kind of like idea that Gilbert Hernandez is not as good, but he's just different. And he's just
different, guys.
He's so good. He's so good. And his story, like, even though I know it's like just like a series of large-breasted women,
large-breasted women have, like, interior lives as well, everyone. Look beyond.
But it also, for some reason, he started, like, actually blanking out the boobs.
Yeah, I know.
Like, and then, like, the last few issues, they were covered in boxes that said for 18 plus only, which I think is, like, this meta-commentary on, like, what people read his books for and what he's trying to say about it. In fact, someone even writes in and is like, hey, how come they're all covered up now? And he's like, they'll be uncovered in the collections.
Right.
but yeah, the fact that they were still getting issues of Love and Rockets is just a treat.
Yeah, totally. I love that LaLuba's granddaughter is just wearing a t-shirt that just says Cole Sprouse.
Yeah. That's great.
Good.
One of my favorite comics of all time. It's just so cool that I can even get to talk about new issues of it on the show.
Every single time this comes out, I'm like, fuck, I have to track down every single trade of this and just, like, lose myself in it completely. Yeah.
If you look at the final page, this has the advertisements for all the collections. I think most of them are on the King shelves.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to get through. They're divided up by creators. And, like, I know that, like, you know, you have to start from the beginning, really, if you want to get the full story. You don't necessarily have to. I think you can jump in on a lot of the trades and get an understanding of how good these comics can be. But they don't start... You know, when they started these comics, they were very young men writing their first comics. So clearly they grew a lot as writers and as artists. But, man, you got it. Yeah, I think it's if you're a true comics fan, it's a rite of passage. You have to at some point in your life read every single Love and Rockets issue.
It's the best.
It's so good. So that is it for the show this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to hear more of us this week, as soon as I put this episode up, I'm going to then edit another Patreon exclusive episode to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. Head on over there and listen to us talk about some incredible graphic novels.
Yeah.
You know what? You know where we can be found. Look us up in the show details.
Yeah. Do a little bit of work yourself.
Yeah,
for fuck's sake.
We read all these books just for you. Yeah. The least you could do is follow us on every social media platform.
Where I never post.
I'm good on that.
Yeah. You're good.
Yeah, so follow me. At the very least.
Absolutely.
And Siobhan. At the very most. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you very soon. Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.